The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, welcome along, Football Show. Champions League second half's getting underway, including Spurs 1, Bayern 2. We have Manchester City still nil all at home to Dynamo Zagreb, maybe one of the more surprising scorelines this evening. We have Real Madrid drawing 2-0 with Club Brugge. PSG away to Galatasaray, that is nil all. Elsewhere, Juventus 1-0 up at home to Bayer Leverkusen. Higuain with the goal for Juve. Atletico Madrid this evening away to Lokomotiv Moscow. That is also nil all. So it's not a thrilling night across the Champions League. But if you're just tuning in, we touched on it earlier. The Spurs-Bayern game is a brilliant one. Damien Delaney here in studio, as he has been all evening and will be for many of the Champions League evenings across the season. I know we haven't mentioned it before, but just for those tuning in, Spurs-Bayern has been everything you kind of hope for in a group stage game.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Breakneck pace. Quality. Spurs probably the better side in the first half. I mean, depending which way you like calling games, Spurs have been very, very pacey, very, very attack-minded. Bayern have also too, and I mean, they got two goals there that, I mean, you could pick the bones out of it, but ultimately, you know, I can't really see if they could do much more defensively. Like, I mean,
well, the last time we were on, it was 1-0. Kimmich had scored a brilliant goal where he kind of chopped inside someone. It was like a free kick-esque kind of a strike.
Yeah.
Since then, I mean, how do you describe the Lewandowski goal to people?
I mean, from a defender's point of view, I think it was in Ndombele, tried to control the ball in the box, probably took a slight risk. I mean, at that state of the game, you're probably saying you're better off just putting your foot through it, but that's just me. The guy's obviously a natural-born footballer, and he probably never put his foot through anything in his life. Mm. So he's going to try and control the ball, so you sometimes have to live with those mistakes. But having said that, I mean, he's turned on a sixpence, Lewandowski, and just swiveled. And he didn't even give Vertonghen a chance to get out and block it, and he's just skidded it in the bottom corner. So, I mean, that's why, you know, when you're at this level of football, I mean, you don't even have to give away chances. They're half chances or less even.
It was barely a chance. Like, aside from maybe miscontrol in the box, which, forgivable-ish, but there were lots of bodies around. He probably thought, I can do it. Lewandowski just pounced on almost nothing.
Yeah, I mean, he had his back to the Spurs goal, and he just kind of let it run across his body, and he's kind of in the middle of the D, and it's just like, just as run across his body, Vertonghen's seeing what's happening, but he just hit it so quick. Mm. And it's in the net, really. Vertonghen didn't get a chance.
You've played at various levels. That must be one of the big differences when you stepped up to Premier League, where even the smallest half chance was more often than not taken. And there was probably moments where you thought, oh, Jesus, I'm almost unlucky he's taken that chance here.
I mean, you never say you're unlucky, but sometimes you do have to be honest after games. And I always thought, if you know, you're honest enough with yourself and you can watch the goals back, and you can always say, well, maybe I could have done this, maybe I could have done that. But then if you chose to do that, you'd have created an even bigger opportunity that they would definitely pick the pass off. So you kind of have to sometimes at that level you have to pick the lesser of two evils, and then if the guy does stand shit or he does something special, you just got to hold your hands up and forget about it and get on with your life on Monday morning. And you can't dwell on it, you can't say, oh well, maybe I should have done better there. Sometimes you have to choose the lesser of two evils, because these are top players, and they will put you in spots where you have to make critical decisions in a nanosecond. And obviously the higher the level, and these guys are Champions League level, they get more of those decisions right, you know. Mm.
So we've a few things to get through, and we'll talk about various points, but we're going to start with Mick McCarthy. He was in town this afternoon. He was naming a squad for Ireland's games against Georgia and Switzerland. Injury hit on various fronts, so we have three of the back four unavailable through suspension, through injury, and through injury, although he's semi-hopeful that Duffy will make it, Mick was saying. And then Dave McGoldrick also not in the squad, though he has notified the club that he may need him, so he's hopeful that McGoldrick comes through. No place for Shane Long, even in spite of McGoldrick's absence. Shawnee Maguire's in the squad. We'll just play a few bits and pieces. So, as you can imagine, the first thing Mick McCarthy was asked about was John Delaney. And as you can imagine, he had absolutely no bloody interest in talking about John Delaney. Have a listen.
Unless it's going to have any effect on my game against Georgia, which none of it has so far, that's what I'm here to talk about.
But he has been the face of Irish football for the last 16, 17 years, so he's big news here as you expect. But what do you think his exit from the association?
Well, it's been pending, hasn't it? So it's of no surprise to me that it's happened. But like I said to you, I'm here to talk about the games.
Do you think he was a good CEO?
We could go on for this for a long time, you and I. I'm here to do and talk about the games. I guess I have a bit of thanks to give him for giving me the job back. Well, that's a lot of other people had a vote in that as well, so I'm delighted that happened and I'm here to talk about it. Hopefully we can qualify for the Euros, which was the intention.
So that was the first 2 minutes. He just wasn't going there in a million years. I mean, the question, do you think he was a good CEO? His face was, this is not happening. Now, he then went from that into Richard Keogh, which he didn't overly enjoy either, but he was very supportive of Keogh. So we'll give you kind of 3-4 minutes of this. This is McCarthy. He was asked whether he had spoken to Richard Keogh, the impact Keogh's absence would have on the team, and then his overall opinion on what happened that night.
He was pretty sore when I spoke to him.
But is he hoping to make a comeback, or what's his thought process at the moment?
Do you know, I didn't have that discussion with him. I rang him to see how he was and to offer him my support, because he's a great guy, Richard. He's been fabulous for me, really good player. And, you know, it's a real terrible injury he's got. Two operations he's got to have. So that was my phone call, bit of support for him.
Yeah, do you think he could make a comeback?
I'm not a medic. Yes, he asked me questions. I haven't seen his report on what it is. I know he's got to have two operations. I think it was his medial and his cruciate. So they're saying he's going to be 15 months. What is he, 33, 34 coming up? It's a long time to be out for him, but he's the sort of guy that will. He's a real determined character. He's always impressed me. Playing against my teams and impressed me even more since he's been one of my team.
Yeah, you'd be without three of your first choice back four for the game against Georgia. Is that much of a worry for you?
No, I'm thrilled by it. I'm not worried by it. There's no point. I'm not joking as I'm thrilled by it. I'm disappointed to have lost Ender when he was suspended. I'm still holding out for Duffer, actually. There is a bit of optimism there, because I spoke to him and they were saying 4 to 6 weeks, and after, I think if he had a scan, he told me they didn't think it was going to be that long. And in one of the games we played, I think it was Georgia here, he had a groin strain which he thought he might miss, and he said, no, I'll be alright, Gaffer, I'll be fine, and he was, played really well. So I have a bit of optimism about him, but of course, sorry? I don't know. We've been trying to get hold of Brighton anyway. I've spoken to Duffer. I know what players are like. Players want to play, and they'll give me the best case scenario always, that they might have a chance of playing. So, and by the way, I want that best case scenario. I like that from players. But until I get an absolute no from him, or from the club, from the medics, I'll retain that bit of optimism.
So he could still make the Georgia game a bit consistent?
I've said I retain a bit of optimism. I'd like to. I'm hoping so. I just wonder, everybody sat in this room when you're judging.
Sorry.
If you've asked me the question, I'm just going to answer if you don't mind. Just wonder that, you know, the one where I was seeing cast the first stone, and you've been out for a drink with the lads. He's the captain of the team. I don't know. He's got in the car with him. He didn't expect to be in such a state at the end of that journey home. People make decisions and they've got to live with them, unfortunately. What do I think of Richard? I think he's a wonderful player. I think he's a great bloke.
Well, the club did say that there was cars laid on for that particular event. You know, should people not... I understand he's had an unfortunate incident, but... Do people, you know, we should be taking a hard line against things like drink driving, especially if the club are there to accommodate them as well.
And I'm sure they will. And they are the rules, aren't they? They're the rules in life. And I read somewhere where it's great footballers think they can do what they want. No, they don't. They're just young men who go out for a drink and make decisions and actually make mistakes like everybody else does. and they are then highlighted and judged far more than other people.
Well, the reason they are is because they do make a lot of money and they are role models for younger boys and girls.
Absolutely.
That's the reason why they're judged heavily.
Well, I don't think it's because they earn a lot of money. That's always one of the reasons put up for it, but they are role models and they are on, you know, they are influencers on social media and things like that, and just through playing, I fully accept that, and that's why they get penalised far more. Penalised by the public, penalised by the rules, penalised by the police and everybody else when they do something wrong.
Were you disappointed, Mick, just from personal perspective?
I'm disappointed he's not playing against any of the games. No, like I said, he's done something, he's got to live with it.
There we are, that's Mick McCarthy speaking today about Richard Keogh. We'll come back to that in 1 second. Just to let you know, in the space of those 2-3 minutes, Byron have taken complete control of this tie with 2 brilliant goals. Sergeant Aubrey with both of them. Absolutely devastating.
Yeah, I mean, like that, we spoke about the level and making a half a mistake. I mean, they're just ruthless in what they do, Byron. You know, they really are.
But first one came down the left-hand side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Serge Aurier, you know, kind of dived in. Didn't get it, and I mean he just cut inside and just absolutely whacked it across the face of goal, hit the post and went in.
You know, Norio's situation there where he feels like Gnabry has him for pace, and so he's gambling all out on trying to tackle him and stop Gnabry getting away, so he slides in. Are you just better off there, even if Gnabry has you for pace, just saying, right, I'm not going to go to ground here, I'm going to stay with him, I'm going to stay 2-3 yards from behind him the whole way, he's going to know I'm behind him and put him under pressure that way, or do you go for broke?
I'll tell you what I usually just head for goal. It's the shortest route there, you know, because that's where he's going or that's where he wants to go.
Yeah.
And if you know, first and foremost, I don't think Serge Aurier should be done for pace, because I mean he's one of the quickest players in Spurs side.
Yeah.
I think it's just I don't want to say it's a lazy decision, but it's just he's made a decision to go to ground. Maybe he didn't fancy the foot race with him, maybe he was worried. I don't think so. I think if he just took the shortest route of where Gnabry was going to go, he'd have run a shorter distance, therefore he would have got himself back semi-goal side and maybe slowed him down for help. I mean, that's kind of what you want to be doing there.
Because when you're diving, you're out of the game.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm not going to tell people. Yeah, it's the last thing you do. Even if you think you can do it in those high risk decisions, and you think you're going to win the ball, unless you're certain you're going to win it, or foul him, really, because that's another way of getting out of it. I mean, if you go to ground there and you realise I won't win the ball, then you just lift your leg and just kind of clip him as you're going by and take the yellow card. If that's what you fancy doing. But I mean, you don't do what you do, you just go to ground honestly, try and win the ball. I know he's having a little moan up with someone, so you can tell he's annoyed.
So that was 53 minutes, and then 55 minutes Spurs got caught playing out and the ball was played at Gnabry.
Yeah, I mean, it just got, you know, Spurs, you know, went 3-1 down, obviously the heads went down, you make bad decisions when you're under pressure, obviously you're thinking worst case scenario, you know, you're thinking headlines tomorrow, you're thinking, you know, people are already talking about rumours of cracks in the squad, you know, I mean, they're all going to be emphasised tomorrow, and I think Spurs just got a penalty possibly. I think Kingsley Coman might have. That'll go to VAR, and I think they will get it. I mean, it's one of those ones the ball bounce up. Danny Rose is coming at a frightening pace. Both of them have put their feet up to get it, and Danny Rose just got, I don't know about that. I think both of them have put their feet up there, you know. It's in Europe it's a penalty, but it's soft. I think that'll be upheld, if I'm being honest, as a penalty. But I think it's very, very soft. But I mean, you know, Spurs don't make that silly decision at 3-1.
Yeah.
You know, this might make it 3-2 and you're still in the game. But like I said earlier about the cracks in the Spurs squad, I mean, that's just going to be, you're thinking headlines tomorrow, you're thinking...
Does that happen on a pitch, yeah? So when they go 3-1 does it cross your mind?
If there's problems in the squad and things aren't great, when things go against you, there is a tendency for the whole thing just to kind of, you know, you think, oh, for God's sake, here we go, the manager's going to be upset, whatever it is. You do think that, and then that's why you follow up with 3 becomes 4 very, very quickly, because everyone just loses concentration.
Gnabry finished the 4th really well. Left-footed shot, picked his... he placed it really, let the ball come across.
Yeah,
it's just,
you know,
ruthless.
Exactly. I mean, it's just a perfect finish. I mean, Lloris got a fingertip on it, hit the post and went in. But again, it's just deadly, deadly. What you expect though from a premier European team.
Honestly, if you were watching this game and you hadn't seen the goals and just were watching the general flow of it, you wouldn't think Spurs were 4-1 down, but it's been that kind of night.
Well, listen, when you get involved in end-to-end with these top sides, you know, when they land punches, they hit hard, you know, and you have to land your, when you land your punches, you have to as well. And I don't think Spurs have them. Sun missed two or three really good chances in the first 20 minutes. And then maybe if you could have got one or two of those, you'd get 2-0 up, then possibly. But this is to make it 4-2 now, but I still fancy Bayern to catch them on the break and make it 5.
Harry Kane standing over the ball, 60 minutes on the clock. Spurs are 4-1 down, now 4-2. Neuer went the right way, it was right in the corner, it was a good penalty.
Yeah, good pace.
Okay.
Good pace.
So 4-2 Spurs, it's a brilliant game. It's definitely the game of the night to be watching. Manchester City, interestingly, an hour in, still haven't broken the deadlock, unusually, against Dinamo Zagreb. So we heard Mick there defending Richard Keogh, as I think he was always going to do. Mm. I mean, nobody thinks drink driving is a smart thing to do, but look, I mean, Mick's always going to do that.
Yeah, Mick's obviously, you can see what an experienced campaigner he is in terms of, you know, dodging questions and batting them away. I mean, the media were only waiting, asking those types of questions. But I wouldn't say he defended Richard Keogh. He just didn't stick the boot in.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he definitely said that he's made decisions in his life and he's going to have to live with them. And I think that's probably going to be the hardest thing now for Richard Keogh to deal with.
He is paying a heavy price. Yeah. So two operations needed. He'll be out for at least 15 months is the word. And he's 33 going on 34. Yeah. That's a hell of a way back, isn't it?
Look, I mean, I would never say never, but I think that would probably be it for him at that level. I know for a fact, from my own point of view, that when you get to that mid to, he's going to be mid-30s by the time he comes back, if you kind of drop off your training, you don't get it back. You know, it's very, very hard to get back up to speed again. You know, I mean, if you miss a month or two, 15 months, your body kind of will go into, at that age, it'll start shutting down. You know what I mean? Muscles that that are active and using won't be active and used for a long, long time. And at that age, it's very, very hard to regenerate and get them going again, which means he'll find it very hard to get back to the level that he was at, if not impossible. I would never say that, but I would say it to be very, 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 very difficult for him. I think Richard will play football again, but I don't think it'll be at Derby and I don't think it'll be at the level that he was at.
What was the longest injury spell you had?
I was very, very fortunate when I got the other side of 30. I didn't have any. Okay. I had a hernia there my last year, and even I found that, you know, I was out for 2 weeks.
Which is nothing,
but it was still surgery, you know, on your hernia, and I was out for 2 weeks, and I remember thinking I was 36 at the time, and it took me over a month to get myself going again. And I do think that, you know, I think people out there will probably, sports scientists out there might correct me if I'm wrong, but my own personal point of view, I think that if you miss, you drop off at 1% at that age, it's very, very hard to get it back.
Whereas if you'd been out for 2 weeks as a 24-year-old?
Oh, listen, you could take 2 or 3 months out, and you know, you're young, sprightly, full of beans, you know, you kind of have that bounce in the muscles, I used to call it, and I think you have that. When you get to 30, you need to really take care of yourself. Like, I mean, you have to be perfect in everything that you do, diet, recovery, the kind of mental side of it, your yoga, your Pilates, all that. You know, it becomes a 24/7 thing, and that's what it was for me, you know, from 30 really onwards for the last 6 years. I mean, it really did become all consuming and all encompassing, really, in everything that I did, you know. And it was worth it, you know, because I got to play into my mid to late 30s.
Oh, of course, yeah. And even to keep the flexibility and twisting, turning, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we wish him well. I mean, it's a long road back. So two operations, that's where Keogh is. Just one last point from Mick McCarthy to play. A lot of people are wondering, would Aaron Connolly make the squad for Brighton? He's been coming off the bench of late, from Galway originally, centre forward as opposed to a winger. Has been playing under Stephen Kenny, obviously, for the 21. So Mick was asked why Connolly, for instance, hadn't made the squad. Here's what he said.
Well, because I was sure Maguire was playing the Championship, who was scoring. I've got Scott Hogan, who has been out of the Stoke team, but has had a real impact when he went on as a substitute. Yeah, I thought he helped change the game in Denmark. The three subs that went on, Callum, Judgy, him. I thought he made a considerable difference when he went on against Switzerland. Just by running in the channel, he made the big centre-half come across and kick it out. And we ended up scoring, funnily enough, from him stretching them. And he was challenging as well to score when Didsy put the ball in the net. I've got Callum Robinson, who's playing in the Premier League. And I'm holding out that Didsy might be all right, David McGoldrick. He's another one that I've a bit of optimism about. Until I got told a categoric no. And if then it is, then I've got options then. If I do want to take one of the 21s, I can. But I would have that discussion with Stephen first.
So I've got enough is mixed feeling, and it's Georgia away and Switzerland away. He has made the point on a few occasions, and he made it today actually, that these are not good games for debutants.
Yeah,
agree with that.
Yeah, look, I mean, Mick, you wouldn't expect anything else from him. You know, he's gone with the safe options, and he's probably right with the back four going to be the way it is. The only thing I would say is Connolly is probably a Mick McCarthy type player. Mick obviously has asked the question, is he better off playing for the under-21s or is he better kind of coming and training with us and potentially not even playing or getting a couple of minutes at the end? And like I said there, or like Mick has said there, he has enough options. He's happy with the options that he has. So you just have to trust him. He's made a decision.
Mm. Does training with the senior squad benefit you more than playing for the 21s?
No, I'd say playing for the 21s would be better. Now, there comes a point where if you've got double digits 21s games, you know, then probably...
No one wants to be the record holder.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you've got 11 and 12 and you've experienced that and you've played in far-flung places in Europe and, you know, you've had games in Dublin and big games and, you know, and you've got what you want out of it, then definitely your next progression is coming and training with the senior team. Mm. But again, they're all things that Mick and Stephen Kenny would sit down and assessing. And obviously, you've got to think for Stephen Kenny, he wants to qualify for a major tournament, so he's probably desperate to hold on to him.
Yeah. You know, Connolly actually was talking, by the way, about playing for Stephen Kenny, and it just sounded like exactly the environment you would presume Stephen Kenny's environment is. So he was saying this after the Armenia game, where he said, he was talking to the seniors here, Connolly said, look, if it happens, it happens. He said, but to be honest, I'm just focusing on the 21s at the moment. It's enjoyable playing with a team like this under Stephen Kenny. I probably gave the ball away 10 or 12 times in that game. I didn't hear one thing from Stephen. He just gives you the freedom to express yourself, and as long as you work hard to get back in, it's fine. And the times it does come off for you, he praises you. It's good. Sounds like a dream, really, for any creative player.
Yeah, it is, and that's what you want at that young age, you know. I've no doubt that when Stephen Kenny gets into the senior job and one of the lads gives the ball away and a goal results from it,
won't be as much.
I don't think he'll be kind of, you know, then he's under serious pressure now because he's losing games and he's under massive pressure on Monday morning and the next day in the media and stuff. So, you know, you want to create that environment for young kids. But like I said, if he's kind of got 10, 11, 12 caps of that, he needs to progress then, you know. And the same as playing under 23s football for Brighton. It's the same once you've kind of got past a certain level there where you've got everything you've got to get over. You need to go on loan if you're not part of the first team plans, you know.
And get moving. We'll take a short break. Spurs 2, Bayern 4. Back in a sec.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
Welcome back. No change. Spurs 2, Bayern 4. Juventus have now gone 2-0 up at home to Bayer Leverkusen. Manchester City have scored at last. There we are. Raheem Sterling, after 66 minutes, has scored for Manchester City. So they're 1-0 up at home to Dinamo Zagreb. And earlier on today, Real Madrid 2, Club Brugge 2. That game was live in Virgin Media Sport. Graeme Souness was talking about it. The game finished 2-2. Madrid conceded 2 first-half goals. And at half-time, Graeme Souness did not think much of their high line.
You play with a high... When you're a good team, you play with a high line. You're three parts of your team, your defence, midfield and strikers, all in touch with each other. And you hold a high line as long as when the opposition have the ball, that ball's been put under pressure by one of your players. The minute someone gets their head up or gets free, that back line has to drop off. And they've not been doing that. They look a disjointed force tonight. Yeah. They really do, Real Madrid. Very, very disappointed in them.
You're a man who would have been in a high line when pressure was and wasn't being put on the ball. Yep. If it wasn't, were you starting to back off?
Yeah, look, I mean, he talks, that's complete sense, that what Graeme was saying there. It's exactly as it is. But all is not well at Real Madrid at the minute. And when all is not well in the camp, little breakdowns in communications, lack of focus, players maybe not feeling the tactics the way they should be. And that's where that shows up, really. And all clearly is not well at Real Madrid at the moment.
You know, one of the great cliches of the likes of Ramos or Marcelo is, oh, they're great going forward, they're not good defensively. Mm. This was often said about the Barcelona team as well, even when they were winning Champions Leagues. You know, oh, he's not great defensively, about any attacking player, it seemed. I often wondered, was that actually true? Or did they just get bad reputations? Because you wonder how bad defence, if they were bad defensively, how they could survive at that level for so long.
Because if you look at the game from a traditional point of view of, you know, full-backs have to defend, centre-backs have to defend, these guys, you know, that Barcelona team revolutionised football, you know, the way they play it, you know. I mean, it was possession, this counter-attacking, winning the ball back up the pitch. So you didn't necessarily have to be, but listen, I've seen Ramos camp in and defend and be absolutely fantastic at it. So the guy can put his tin hat on and just defend for his life. I mean, he's more than capable of doing that. So I think that's a touch unfair. Piqué the same, Puyol as well the same.
They could all defend.
I mean, of course they could, you know.
That was my sense, but it was one of the easy things to say about them. Well, they're not very good. They're good going forward.
But when you have 80% of the ball, I mean, you don't get many opportunities to defend, but I'm pretty sure that if you look back over those teams of the mid-2007-2008, that Barcelona great side, there are times where they just dug in and sought out.
So controversially, you're saying that Puyol or Piqué could have made it at Crystal Palace?
No. They were trying to play too many short balls.
Yeah. That's Virgin Media Sport. They've over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League, Nations League games live this season, available to all Virgin Media TV customers. You can download the app as well. Check out the hashtag WeFreeSport for more. On high lines, Liverpool obviously have been playing that way of late, and Joel Matip's been talked about a little bit. He was so, like, he's carrying the ball out a bit, and he's talking about how much he's enjoying that this week. He did it again at the weekend against Sheffield United. He said, "We have the ball quite often. I try and help my teammates, try and do something to create something. I really enjoy it. The manager lets me do it as well. When I was young, I tried to play from the back. I just think it's the way I am. I hope it'll help the team." He says, "Maybe I shouldn't do it every few minutes, but I think Klopp trusts me. If I step in and the risk is not too high, I can help the team, then it's helpful."
Yeah.
Is this something all defenders should be doing? We touched on it with Pat Nevin last night, and he was talking about, you know, Hansen would do it and it was a great thing, and you would draw a man and you could change the whole dynamic of everything ahead of you. So how does it work? We might start off with the specifics of Matip and Liverpool firstly.
Well, first and foremost, he's right. I mean, if a team, say Sheffield United or a Watford or whoever Liverpool are playing, sometimes they'll just camp in and they'll put 10, 11 players behind the ball, and you need to move that around somehow. If they all just get set in their slots and their gaps are good and nothing's really happening, sometimes a centre back stepping in. I would probably say that so when you play against Liverpool, you're always looking for chinks of light, chinks in their armour, you know what I mean? You're looking to set traps, because if you show up at a stadium, you think, you know what, lads, we're just going to be in our 18-yard box for 90 minutes, let's just get on with it and see what we, you know, you're going to have to look to counter-attack, you're going to have to look for weaknesses in Liverpool's, and one of the ones you would do is you look for things you can control, and you can control restarts, you know, you can control Liverpool in their own half insofar as you can kind of guide them into what you want, and one of the things you would probably do, and one of the things we used to do a lot was saying, okay, let's get our centre forward to go on Van Dijk, because he's obviously the best on the ball. You don't want him stepping in, because if he starts stepping in, he can really move you about. I mean, he can thread passes, he can play balls in behind, he can hit the switch, and he can really start bouncing passes and creating mayhem. So the other one then you say is, we don't want Fabinho having it either, because similar, you know, once he gets the ball at the bottom of a midfield diamond or the bottom of the base of the midfield, and he has the whole pitch opened up, he can go left, he can go right, and he can lend passes, and he can start moving you around and creating spaces. So you kind of say, what's the Matip is probably the poorest on the ball of those three. So you tend to say to you, from goal kicks, your number 9, go and stand on Van Dijk, and get your number 1 or number 8 to go and stand on Fabinho, and say, okay, no problem. Now you want Matip stepping in. Because you know full well, if he starts stepping in, he probably hasn't got the quality to start threading passes, and you'd be inviting him. And they'd be almost like triggers in your mind, you know, that, okay, brilliant, we've got Liverpool to do what we want. Although Matip there thinks that it's great for him.
Just gonna say, this is terrible. Matip thinks he's Beckenbauer here.
That's what I'm saying. But if you're a manager or a top-class coach setting up against Liverpool, these are things you want to start setting up.
It makes total sense. Because often when he does get up and get up towards, 25 yards out, it's not like he threads one through. He often sideways pass, bit of a nosebleed.
But you would always, because I know that he's a defender, and when he starts stepping into areas, he will start getting a little bit like, oh my God, I'm now very conscious that I've left Van Dijk and Fabinho 2v2. And if I lose this, we could be in trouble. So he will often then take a very, very simple, basic pass, almost just go straight to the right back, because obviously Liverpool's Trent Alexander-Arnold will be high and wide. Yes. As he's stepping in, he's almost getting on the same line as Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Alexander Arnold, and all of a sudden he is conscious of what he's left behind, and he thinks, if I try and thread one here and I give it away, one ball and they're straight at us, and that's what you want to exploit as an opposition team playing against Liverpool. These are the bits.
And what decides when you press, say, Matip? Like, who goes?
Well, what you would do is you'd let him come to you. So, I mean, if you're all in your slot, so yeah, if you've your number 9 and one of your number 8, you'd have your other number 8 and your number 6. As soon as you'd say to your number 8, you know what, man, I want you to set up camp on the base of the centre circle in our half.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the trigger point, OK? And everybody now knows that as soon as Matip is kind of strolling or striding in, whatever he wants to do, fine, leave him. Stay on the base of the centre circle, look disinterested, keep the gaps nice and tight so he hasn't got anything
too easy,
really in to pick you. Back four, be nice and aware that the ball can be spun in behind, because if he's now stepping into your half with no pressure on the ball, you can be fairly sure that Liverpool have runners in behind. So back four, give yourself a nice little yard there.
A bit like Souness is saying, actually.
Right, yeah. And let's start, see if he can, we want to invite him to start threading balls, because by the way, if he gets one wrong and you've got a pacey number 8 and a pacey number 9 and you've got legs in your midfield, you can exploit the hole that he's left, because you know full well that Alexander Arnold's going to be 20, 30 yards inside your half, and the same on the left side. So you want to create these little pockets. So while Matip is kind of in his own little world thinking he's brilliant, teams are definitely setting up for things like that, because when you go to when you play against a Liverpool or a Man City, you know they're going to have complete control of the game. You want to try and control the things like set pieces. If you go to Liverpool, we used to always say, make them earn it. Right, so if they're going to get a goal against you, sometimes they'll have a great passing move, running behind, they'll finish, and you go, well, that's Liverpool. But what you don't want to do is go and give away a penalty inside 5 minutes, or do what Watford did against Man City the other day, and that's kind of, you know, give away a penalty and then give away a goal from a set piece, from a corner as well. I mean, Man City must be one of the smallest teams in the league. I think that's probably one of the primary reasons they signed Rodri, because he's a 6'3", 6'4" kind of guy. If you take Rodri to Man City's team, they are very, very small. Mm. And I think Pep would probably be aware that he'd be susceptible on set pieces. So what you don't want to do is give up a set piece to them. And the same with Liverpool. So you're going to say to yourself, you know what, let's control the controllables of what we got, and we'll set these little traps for them, and it's a way to relieve pressure, and it's a way we might actually land a punch,
yes,
and get our noses in front and get 1-0 up. And if we get 1-0 up, well, we've now knocked them out of their stride a little bit. They might become a little bit, you know, panicked, but they might just start thinking, oh God, we're losing 1-0 at Anfield, yeah, we need to like up the tempo here. And that's what you want to do, knock them out.
So,
excuse me.
You know, it's absolutely fascinating. And you know, you now think of Per Matip there in his own world going, God, look at him, I'm able to stride forward.
But look, on the flip side of that, I mean, he will stride in at times.
And he'll do something, yeah.
And if you're not disciplined, he will put one on the back here, or he will find a number, yeah, of someone in the 10. But what I'm saying is, you're willing to risk that, because you're going, do you know what, if he does it, you kind of have to hold your hands up and say, well, we tried something, it didn't, yeah, work. But on the law of averages, that guy will have a little panic up as soon as he gets to the number 8, or 2 or 3 yards short of the number 8,
yeah,
and he hasn't got a pass into a 10, or he hasn't got a ball in behind, you know he's not the type of guy like Van Dijk would, where he'll shape for a pass, chop back, and then hit the switch out to the left back to Robertson.
He's just that bit more limited. So when he either hits a dud pass to one of your players, or even, say, someone near enough goes after him and nicks the ball, at that point is the plan, all systems go, let's fall forward.
That's it. That's
when we take our risk.
I mean, ultimately what you want to do is you want to try and get him to thread a ball. And if I was a centre-back and he was trying to feed one in, all I got to do is get a toe on it. Just tow it away, and hopefully it'll break to like my number six in front of me.
Yeah.
And then he almost, if he wants, he now knows I can hit that ball around the corner blind, because there's nobody going to be in that channel. Van Dijk is left side centre half, and Matip is nearly next to me.
Yeah, and Alexander Arnold's probably high as well.
Oh, he's going to be on the same line as Matip. So I mean, you could just hit that blind. It doesn't have to be a good ball.
And your forwards know they can.
Oh, well, your number 9 now knows. Don't start going over to that space, because you bring Van Dijk with you. You want to keep Van Dijk away. So you want to almost look disinterested,
yes,
trying to keep Van Dijk on his left side of the pitch. And then as the ball breaks, as I get my toe in, it breaks my number 6. Now as the ball's coming, he's drawn his leg back, you're on your bike.
So if your striker up top had not been concentrating, Matip brings the ball up, you get a toe to it,
yeah,
your number 6 hooks the ball into that channel,
yeah,
and your striker has already been just standing there, hands on his hips, yeah, and Van Dijk's with him and clears
you
it.
See that?
He'd be in massive trouble
he
then.
He wouldn't be, because you'd have worked on that all week.
Yeah,
so one of the things, 100%, but you wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't be playing if the guy had that in his locker, or the guy had it, you know. Now look, if the guy's been chasing lost causes, passes all day. You've got to give him a break, fair enough. But I mean, all in all, everybody then is on the same page. Here comes Joel Matip. Okay, these are scenarios we spoke about, these are things we worked about. Here he comes, here he comes, here he comes. Oh, there's that fourth pass. No, everybody is going, your eights are going, oh, this is Christmas.
But you know, it's a good insight though into the football intelligence that even if you've got a fox in the box type striker, to play at that level, you can't just get away on that. You need to be clued into tactics and be thinking sharp.
Oh, well, without doubt, you know what I mean? And I'm pretty sure that if all that played out the way it was supposed to play out and he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing, and we brought up Monday morning and he wouldn't play again. Do you know what I mean?
You would be like, listen,
we spoke with this all week, you know? I mean, we asked you to do this and there's no reason why you shouldn't have done it, so you should have.
Really interesting.
That's kind of, they're one little things. Like I said, you control what you can control, because against Liverpool, you won't be able to control a lot.
84 minutes gone. The camera's cut to Pochettino. He's already watching back Bayern Munich's fifth goal on the iPad in front of him. So we're just seeing it here for the first time. Bayern starting with the ball in their own half. It's Gnabry again, and it looks like Aurier's got caught again. Ball over the top from 30, 40 yards. It's a pretty straight ball, and that's all it is. And Gnabry's taking it with absolutely, you know, precision. But he's got like
it's very similar to the third goal, really, in terms of just a straight run, straight ball. Albeit this one puts him in one-on-one with the keeper, the other one he had to kind of come infield himself. But it's, you know, I mean, that's.
That's a bad goal to concede.
Yeah, it is. A terrible goal from Aurier's point of view. But having said that, you'd kind of want to see where your right side centre-back is as well on that. Because if you have, as a centre-back, you've seen that your right back is getting absolutely rinsed with the ball in behind, you'd want to start edging towards that channel. Now, that's not great, don't get me wrong, but you'd want to start edging that way, thinking Gnabry really is doing a job on Aurier. I need to go over there and start helping him and then, you know, shuffle over as a back four. But at that level, I suppose, it's difficult for a right side centre back to be going over helping Aurier, because he's like, man, I got enough man's here.
Got Lewandowski here.
Right. So from that point of view, I do understand that's a little bit difficult, you know.
That's a hell of a hat trick.
Yeah, look, it is.
You
look at Kieran Trippier out in Atletico Madrid. They obviously, you know, through there, I know they got Kyle Walker's Peters there as well, but maybe this is a step too far. But you know, I mean,
I do want, you know, a player like Aurier who's got such pace. You do wonder if that pace has bailed him out too often growing up as a teenager, whereas somebody who didn't have quite as much pace had to learn the hard way and position themselves better.
Well, that level, you won't get away with
positional
errors.
You're facing at that level is as fast as 100%. You.
Without question. And you won't probably have as much help from your centre-back for the reason I just said, because he's probably thinking, man, I got enough of me played here with my guy.
Whereas when he was 18 in the academy.
Or even in the Premier League, you know what I mean? You know, the centre-back can drift over there and sweep that up, no problem. But that level, you know, Lewandowski's doing a job on the centre-backs. They're kind of worried about themselves. Yeah, yeah. But that's the level that you're at right now. And unfortunately, Aurier has to take care of his side of the business, and he hasn't tonight. I mean, Gnabry's just absolutely rinsed him. I mean, you could see it coming, really. I mean, I know when it went to 4-2, I did say we'll go to 5 because Spurs are going to be pushing. And I can be pretty sure that Aurier is breathing pretty heavy right now because they want to try and get back in the game. And as soon as he gets run the other way, he's done.
To round off the Matip conversation, it's a brilliant insight because we've been looking at this all the wrong way. You know, everybody's been writing pieces all weekend saying Matip, he's like Beckenbauer and this is, you know, a fantastic play, whereas actually you've described how it might be construed from the opposite point of view.
I'd be pretty certain that's what it is.
That's what they were doing, What was your attitude when you were in possession, you were part of a back three or a back five or a back four, and you were suspicious, are they laying on a trap for me here?
Yeah, I just shelled it.
Did you?
Yeah, why? Because you know it's coming, you know, and I'm not a good enough player to Matip to start threading balls. But then again, at Liverpool, they expected a little bit more.
Lewandowski, wow, 6-2. This won't be fun for Spurs in the morning.
Spurs have absolutely thrown a towel in. But this is what happens when there's cracks in the squad and you come under that amount of pressure, cracks become massive cavernous holes, really, and that's what's happened to Spurs right now, you know.
So a team that were together and everything was rosy, they might lose this 3 or 4-2, but 6 is trouble.
Look, 6 is a hammer. I mean, this is pretty similar to when the third one, then the fourth one followed pretty quickly. The fifth one and then the sixth followed probably because mentally the fifth one's gone and you thought, oh my god, this is terrible, not really thinking it could be worse. Five's bad, but 6 is worse.
Yeah,
you know.
Look at this finish here from Lewandowski. First time he's fallen back, but he just
It's a good finish, but yeah. I mean, you know, it's
Spurs gave the ball away under no pressure.
Yeah, the exact same as the third goal was a good goal. Fourth one is a gift where they get caught in possession. Fifth one goes in. Sixth one's the exact same, caught in possession again. I mean, it's a good finish, but I mean, you know, Bayern have been full value for it.
And again, very final point on this. So you're saying I just shout it out like I'd see this a mile away. If it's looking a bit too easy, then maybe there's a reason it's looking too easy.
If I have the ball and they're giving me an easy pass, I'm just taking it.
Yes.
Right? I'm just, there you go, my job is done. I'm a defender, you're a midfield player, you get paid more money than me. Your job is to like find pockets. That's not my job. And that's kind of like a role response. Oh my God, it's just gone to
seven.
It's just gone to seven.
We can't get more than three sentences out here.
I know, yeah. We'll finish off this Matthew one tomorrow night, will we?
This is where it starts getting a bit damaging. Well, this is where you damaging.
This is where you throw the towel in, you know, and this is what's happened.
7-2.
Yeah. I mean,
Daniel Levy's looking on, Pochettino's looking on, people are leaving. 88 minutes on the clock. Oh, it's Gnabry again. He scored four tonight. This is getting silly now. So we're seeing it again ball given away.
I mean, they're trying to play out now as opposed to just doing, really, just shelling it, really.
Gnabry finds the ball played to a edge of the area, and again, just the quality is unbelievable.
I think Danny Rose there really is kind of backing off. I mean, but again, it's six. You know, they're not in a great place right now, and it's a good finish, really, to be honest with you.
How do a team give away a goal like the sixth one, where they're passing between themselves and just give it away, and then quite literally a minute later give the ball away again?
Man. Concentration is absolutely gone. I mean, that's where you're looking for some serious characters there to be like, when it goes to four, you're looking for people to say, this stays at four.
Okay.
Because four is bad and we're going to get hammered. But if this goes to four, five, six, seven, and I said that on the pitch before, and lots of times, you got to understand you're getting hosed. Mm. You know, you're not getting out of it. Even when it went to 4-2, you do have a thing in your mind saying, 4-2 is not bad. Okay. We can kind of defend this in the press afterwards. The fans will say, well, we started well and, you know, we'll get away with it. 5 is terrible, 6 is atrocious, 7 is...
7's a crisis. Yeah.
7 is, yeah. 7 is, people are losing their job, you know. I mean, either players that are involved in this, you know, will be looked upon differently, or Poch might walk or he might be pushed because clearly something's not right there. Mm. But that's where you just want people to accept the game's over, 4-2, we're not getting back in it.
Because they did show resolve and character and togetherness at the weekend when they were down to 10 men and they came back to win.
That's Southampton though, you know what I mean? All due respect to them. This is Bayern, this is an elite team in Europe who will smell weakness and they will, you know, drop a blood in the water, they'll go for it. And they've obviously sensed that here. And I mean, this could be, hey, they're going again.
It's a bit ruthless from Bayern now.
Yeah, I mean,
on a pitch, do you ever turn into your fellow pros and go, lads, stop? It's 7-2, you're going to get us killed. Or would you?
No, I mean, listen, at four, I'm saying that. Like, listen.
The Bayern lads, here, lads, either.
Oh, no, not the Bayern lads, sorry.
That's what I meant.
No. You never say that. But like I'm saying, my own team.
Oh, your own team, yeah.
You're going, listen, just kick it, get it away and get out of here and we'll pick the bones out of it, but at least there's something to pick the bones out of.
I know, I was half wondering if you turned to your fellow pro and
no, I wouldn't do that. That's none of your business.
Here, Gnabry, back off, mate. You've had four.
So
tonight they've gone 53 minutes and then 55 minutes they conceded two and then 83, 87, 88.
That is pure concentration. Mm. And when things aren't well, that's the first thing that'll go, really.
So 7-2, that's quite something this evening.
Go back to a Matip chat or what?
I mean, anytime we do, Bayern score. I'm not sure.
You might as well have another cut off that again. have another stab at it. Oh, so it could be 8.
I was just about to bring it up again and they're almost
just
in. I was going to ask if there's ever a scenario where, say, you're the Matip in the team whereby they're giving you that bit of space, would anyone, manager at halftime, another player, say to you, would they ever say to you, do you know what? We're finding these tough to break down, even though we know they've kind of played you to be the dummy here.
Yeah.
You need to step in and make them pay for it. Take a risk.
I mean, I wouldn't, no, because that's not my job.
Okay.
It's midfield player's job to break that down. You know, that's why they get paid all the money and that's why they're, you know, get all the headlines and all that stuff. That's their job. I mean, ultimately, you're right when it's a little bit, you want me to step in. But unless you're Van Dijk, you don't want to be asking Matip to be making high-risk decisions 30 yards into the opposition or 10, 20 yards into the opposition half. I mean, you just don't, because he's not that player.
And Premier League teams have so much pace now, they'll hit you.
Right, well, I mean, this thing was tailor-made for us when we were at Palace. As we lived off those things with Zaha, Bolasie and people like that, because we knew that if we could tempt them into leaving those holes, we only need to be right once, right, where we would get down, and that's kind of what you do. But every team will have this for every team they play against, you know. So come Thursday morning, you're having team meetings, and then you go out in training and you work on it. You want to set these little traps for teams, and you're saying, okay, they have a real habit of this. Or another way you look at it is you'd say, what are Liverpool really good at? What's the main thing they really want? What is it? They know it's front three, running in behind. So you know what? Let's just drop off and take away their main threat and make them go somewhere else. Now, they'll get you eventually.
Sure.
But you might stay in the game longer and it won't be eight.
Yes.
Like Watford the other day, you know?
Yes, yes. So. Well, it hasn't been eight for Bayern tonight. 7-2, final score. Incredible scoreline tonight. We'll see what the fallout from this is. We're taking a very short break. Back in a second.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Yeah, welcome back. We were just keeping a vague eye on BT Sport there during the ad break. Certainly the panel of Rio Ferdinand, Peter Crouch, and we haven't heard Hargreaves yet, but they were definitely pointing the finger at Pochettino's tactics. I don't know, did anything massive jump out to you about the way Spurs set up?
Not really. Just to kind of reiterate the point I said earlier about Serge Aurier, you know, he didn't get any protection, which is what they were saying,
yeah.
And that's probably because other people had other jobs to do. And when you're at that level, you're supposed to be able to do your job without any help, unfortunately. And Gnabry, I think 99% of the time, Aurier can do that. But Gnabry's just so, so quick.
They seemed after a while to smell blood over there and realise Gnabry had the beating of him.
Without doubt. And that's what the good sides do. And Gnabry did have the beating of him. And I think Aurier, you know, probably should have put the brakes on in an attacking sense and realised, hang on a minute, I'm getting roasted here defensively.
Yeah.
I need to just, you know,
break even.
Oh, just catch me bread a little bit, because you can't keep running forward and running back at the same pace, right? Mm. You know, especially if you're running forward and Gnabry's not going with you, he's nice and fresh in your...
It leaves Spurs after two games in Group E on a single point. Mm. They drew their first game and obviously they've lost tonight. So Bayern are in six, Red Star Belgrade three, Spurs and Olympiacos are in 1 point apiece. Spurs host Red Star Belgrade on match day three. And it was a bit of a Mission Impossible job last year in the group stages for them. It's shaping up in a similar vein this year. So that's an incredible result this evening. 7-2. And then before we go, Man City in the end, 2-0 winners against Dinamo Zagreb. Foden with their second goal after Sterling got their first. Let me give you Juve. They were 3-0 winners against Bayer Leverkusen. Atletico away to Moscow were 2-0 winners. And as we mentioned already, Real Madrid drew 2-2 with Club Brugge earlier on this evening. Damien Delaney, excellent and off the ball. Proper analysis and insight, says somebody on Twitter. People don't really say nice things on Twitter, so that counts for double. Listen, you're back in tomorrow, so there were about 10 different things we wanted to talk about, so we'll get to some of them. One of them, ironically, was what do you say when your team's been spanked? That was going to be about Newcastle, but it can apply to Pochettino this evening, so we'll be back with you tomorrow evening from 7. OTB Sports Radio in the morning, 7:30. The lads will be in all the usual places, offtheball.com. And then tomorrow, Damien back with us tomorrow night. We'll also have Ronan O'Gara talking rugby, and we'll hear from the 1995 World Cup winning out half for South Africa, Joel Stransky as well. So really good show for you tomorrow. Tom Dunn is on the way next. Good luck. With guilt like your eyes.